Welcome to the Speaking Podcast. You can find all our episodes on speakingpodcast.com. We're also on BitChute and YouTube at Speaking Podcast. I also have the Meditation Podcast, the Learn Polish Podcast, and the Awakening Podcast. This week, my guest, Professor Justin Goldston. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Roy. Thanks for having me.
So, Justin, my usual question to my guests is, you might let the listeners know, who's Justin?
I am a professor of project and supply chain management at Penn State University. I do a lot of discussions around the world in the areas of supply chain management, emerging technologies such as artificial intelligence and blockchain. But I would say my true passion lies in the area of sustainability. I'm also a five-time TEDx speaker in the area of emerging technologies such as blockchain and artificial intelligence. And I'm also an organizer for TEDx PSU Wilkes-Barre, where we were supposed to have our first discussion or our first event, I should say, in March, but the pandemic had other plans on that one. So we're going to move it to the spring of 2021.
All right, yeah, because I have a friend, she does the one in Warsaw, and they've done it online. She does the women's TEDx in Warsaw, so they've done it online. So hopefully they'll come back and you'll be able to do, you know, meet people in person. It's a lot better.
Yes. So we have one speaker coming over in, was one speaker from Africa coming. So hopefully if we have it in the fall, she can come over here and share her knowledge.
Okay, very good. So I always like to know the speaker's journey. I mean, I've seen your TEDx, but before we get into that, I'd like to know, you know, growing up, how you were, how you got into overcoming, say, a fear of public speaking, if you ever had a fear.
I would say I've always had a fear of public speaking. And, you know, I mean, yes, in undergrad, you have to do those group presentations at the end of every class and things like that, but that really doesn't prepare you for public speaking, you know. And I was a management consultant in the industry, you know, so I was always, you know, making presentations to small, you know, in small boardrooms and things like that, but it's not like a TED event, you know. And so my speaking journey is kind of funny in that I was never a public speaker, and one of my students actually checked me on the whole blockchain deal. Where I was teaching in a executive MBA program, and one of my students came to me and said, "Dr. Goldston, it's like I seen this article in I think it was in Forbes or Wall Street Journal it was some other or HBR or something like that," and he said that they're saying this blockchain thing can transform the supply chain industry. And I just knew blockchain with Bitcoin at that given point in time. I said, let me get back to you on that one. You know, so I did my research and I said, yeah, this thing can really have an impact. You know, so I reached out to Cornell, and they were just introducing their blockchain certificate. So I did a little bit of postdoc research at Cornell. And you know, that gave me my foundation for my TEDx topic. So within the way TEDx events work is you'll be given speaking coaches. But at the Rochester Institute of Technology, that was my first TEDx event. And the students did not have any support, that they did not have that much support. So they were essentially self-taught TEDx coaches. I did five TED events. They were the best ones because they were candid. They were direct, you know? So in my first meeting with them, they said, "Dr. Goldston," he said, "we're techies and we don't get what you just talked about." So you know, that's where that kind of you know gave me a you know a reality check. And then I reached out to an individual on LinkedIn, which is now my TED coach for my TED event. And you know, he essentially said the same thing, and he said, you have to break it down to where a 8-year-old can understand it. yes, this thing, this topic is very complicated, but you have to break it down where our child can understand it. You know, so I do, we went through many iterations, you know, and he also said that, you know, cause I was going to do five different angles, hit it from five different angles. He said, you're not going to be able to do that. He said, yes, you're very optimistic. He said, but I've been doing these TED events for 10 years. He said, you don't want to do that. He said, you just need to have different, you know, you have an initial foundation and then you hit it from different angles at the end of your discussion. He said, because if you try to do five different talks, you're going to get those things mixed up when you're on that stage and you have hundreds of people looking at you and that light comes on and you're standing in that little round red circle, you know? So I would say that, I mean, that's my story. That's my journey. And I would say that the lessons learned from that is trust. One, trust the system. Two, don't try to do it on your own. And three, try to reach out to as many people as possible to get assistance. If you're trying to do public speaking, if you're trying to do a TED event, whatever it is.
And what kind of preparation did you do for your first one?
Endless. It was endless preparations. I bet you I practiced that 15-minute speech probably about 100 times. Wow. And I bet you I practiced it about 100 times. And the funny thing is that every single speech, the toughest part is where you're going to stay as soon as you get out there. As soon as that door opens, as soon as you walk on stage, the thing is, what are going to be those first five or six words? What's going to get that audience interested? And every single one, I switched it up until they announced my name. I switched every single one of them up. You know, so, and the thing is, I tweaked it based on the audience's responses. Because I'm not going to say which event it was. Those who looked at a lot of my TED Talks can probably tell which one it was. But there was one of them where, and that's another thing, where my TED coach said, don't look at anybody whenever you say, just look over their heads, right? And I did make the mistake of looking at one individual. He was an older gentleman, like in his 70s. And, you know, I was talking about blockchain. I was talking about technology. And he was just staring at me the entire time. Like, it was like he didn't even blink. And he just completely threw me off my game. And like I said, that one, I felt I bombed, right? And it was crazy because I had that event. See, I'm almost going to slip up and tell myself. I had that event at like 8 o'clock at night. And then I had to drive to the air, like 2.5 hours to the airport, hop on a plane and follow and go to the next TEDx event the next day at 2 o'clock the next day. It was a hour and a half flight, you know?
Yeah, that's crazy.
So any delay, I wasn't making that event. So I walk into that event and they were announcing the first speaker. You know, I was the last speaker because I knew I was coming from somewhere else. But you know, like I said, any delay. So that was a mind racking event. But that next event, oh, I rocked it. It was excellent. But again, you have to stop. And I think that was one of my fails where, you know, that third one that I think didn't go so well, that was my third TEDx event. And I was like, oh, that's my third one. I didn't practice as much. Right. Mm-hmm. But again, it doesn't matter how many you do, you have to keep practicing.
Yeah.
Even if it's the same topic, you have to keep practicing your speech. Because the audience will direct you how well or how bad that speech goes or that engagement goes.
Exactly.
Take it from me. I'm learning from my mistakes.
No, I only done a TEDx open mic, and I remember when I was sitting down prior to it, I saw that there was a fan over the circle. So that's how I opened up. I said, I see the time here. And if I fail, that's what the fan is going to do, is going to drop on my head. And it worked. You know, I got the audience. But I also saw a guy and he was just sitting there, arms folded. But I was told beforehand, a guy just said to me, he said, concentrate on the people that are engaged and that are, you know, laughing at your jokes and everything. Don't be looking. So you know, that's how we control you. But you learn from it. You know, we make these mistakes and we adjust.
Yeah. I mean, and that's great advice, because, you know, I think I found that in one of my events where there was one student I spoke with him before my event, and, you know, that was my focus at one of my events. You know, I was, you know, walking across the stage, but whenever I went on that one part of the stage, that's who I focused on, because I know he was engaged, because I know he's interested in my topic. Right. So it's kind of like, you got to pick, like you said, you have to pick out certain people or certain areas, you know, in the crowd that make you comfortable.
Yeah, exactly. And like you mentioned about people getting on. So how can a person, what's your advice for a person that aspires to be a TEDx speaker, how to go about it?
Choose something that you're passionate about. Do not do it for recognition. Do not do it for popularity, because me, in reviewing hundreds of individuals trying to get on my TED event, you know, literally hundreds of individuals trying to get on my PSU TED event, you can see through that. And you know, it needs to be genuine, you know, whenever you're speaking with somebody.
So there's like one thing, I've looked at your TEDx speeches, and to be honest, you do make it entertaining, because it is a difficult topic, blockchain. So like, you might break it down, because I know it's a hot topic at the moment, and like nodes and ledgers and everything. You might give us a bit of tips on how to understand it.
So I would say, I first start off by saying that blockchain is a technology in which Bitcoin, Ethereum, Ripple, who's getting in a little trouble right now, is built upon. You know, it is not the true cryptocurrency. It is the technology that it's built upon. It is known as the distributed ledger. So because it's a distributed ledger, the larger the blockchain becomes, the more secure it becomes. That increases the transparency, that increases the trust within a blockchain.
Like, say, not nodes, because I'm hearing a lot about the nodes. What are the nodes all about?
So the nodes are, again, it's decentralized, and the nodes are essentially the computers, the individuals. You know, so it's a consensus-based system. So you're a node, I'm a node. There's tens of thousands of people that are nodes within a blockchain. And whenever a transaction occurs, you have to reach consensus that transaction is indeed valid. So I have to approve it. You have to approve it. Thousands of other people have to approve that transaction is indeed valid for it to get written to the blockchain. So that's what makes it trustless. That's what makes it secure. And I'm going to expand on the security aspect a little bit in that if anyone tries to hack that block, I see it, you see it, thousands of other people see it and say, oh, whoa, something's going on here, you know. So in order for someone to ensure that no one sees, you know, that, then they have to hack into my system, your system, the thousands of other people's systems, you know, to ensure that transaction is untraced. So that's what makes the blockchain very, very, very transparent. And that's what makes it secure.
And like, I've heard of people losing or forgetting their password, and they could be holding on to what's the best way to make sure that doesn't happen?
Put it in a lockbox, take it to a bank, put it in a lockbox. There's a number of individuals that had Bitcoin back in, you know, 2010, and they have like two chances to get their secret key right, you know, otherwise it gets locked forever. But there have been individuals who have lost their private keys, you know. So they I think that they estimate, you know, thousands of Bitcoin is just lost. They're unrecoverable, you know, because you have to understand that people bought Bitcoin at like $2 and didn't think anything was going to come of it, you know. So there's no telling where those private keys are, you know. So, and then you heard the one individual that paid, you know, that paid for two pizzas with like 10,000 Bitcoin or something, you know, when it was like less than a cent, you know. So there's all kinds of those stories. But again, you know, people also ask me in terms of these crypto, you know, the cryptocurrencies that are out there that, you know, are a fraction of a cent, and Dogecoin that went up, it went up like 100% New Year's Day, but it was like 0.0004. And then it went up to 1 cent, you know, and then a lot of people cashed in on that one. But there are very few. You need to be very rare. I would say crypto is like penny stocks. I would equate crypto to penny stocks. It's highly volatile, and there's thousands of them out there. And I would say a high percentage of those thousands are going to go down to zero in the next couple of years, although the crypto market's hot right now.
When people are asking me, I tell them only do it with money that you're happy to lose, because.
And that's what exactly I say I invest in Bitcoin. Yes, I invest in Ethereum. But I tell myself, if this thing goes down to zero, am I going to be OK? So I'm OK with losing what I invest in Bitcoin, what I invest in Ethereum.
There's a friend of mine, he had his Ethereum hacked and $500,000 taken. No way getting it back.
Really?
Yeah.
How did that happen? Please tell me more.
He thinks it was some guy that was hanging around with him that, I don't know, must have tapped into his computer or something, but I couldn't do anything.
Yeah, but he had to have the private key though. So you're saying he had his key somehow?
Yeah, he must have.
This. Okay, yeah, that's
the only wiped way him out, and he had no way of getting it back. Like, so.
The only way he would have got into that, yeah.
But the technology itself, because I know that, I've heard you on your speech, you know, about like say using it for in hospitals and everything, because you know there's a lot of errors. Like in theory, it's a fantastic system, even for like houses if you're doing contracts for sales and everything, because. Like in Ireland, it was a case of a solicitor had sold a house 20 times. So if you use this technology, that would not be possible.
Exactly. And so I I'm going to limit what I say here. We're actually developing a blockchain solution. Me and my partner, he did computer science research at MIT. He's actually a chief security officer at a blockchain company. So he has a lot of experience in terms of security. He has a lot of experience in blockchain startups, and we're actually developing a solution. So we are aligned in that we only develop solutions for good, for positive impact. And we're developing a blockchain solution to track and trace land ownership, to track and trace the development of goods, you know, garments and things like that in Africa. You know, so we're going to Africa, and I mean, if it expands to other parts of the world, I mean, that's fine, but that's our main focus, because I think that there's a lot of corruption in Africa. Some of those individuals don't have access to banks, you know, so I think that that's the area of greatest need. So that's why we're going there. Absolutely. And we're providing blockchain solutions for them.
Brilliant. Because in reality, Africa should be the richest country in the world with all the, you know, resources that they've got. But everyone is, you know, pillaging for decades, you know, it is just constantly being.
Yes. And that's the thing. And so we're doing a lot with smart contracts because of that. You know, there's people from outside of Africa who comes in and say, and has these agreements and say they're going to pay, you know, the locals, and that never happens. But with the blockchain and with smart contracts, hey, you already have the agreement and it's automatically executed. So I don't care what you say. once they say their job is done, boom, it's done. It's transacted because it's on the blockchain and it's transparent, you know, and that's our key selling point to the people. And that's the keys. And we're trying to get in with the governments as well. I mean, whenever I mentioned the blockchain nations on that TEDx event, we're trying to create blockchain nations in Africa.
Very good. Yeah. Oh, that'll be fantastic to get that going. And I see as well that you talk a lot about AI.
Yes. So that's another project. We have a lot of projects going on. So, but again, so that's another company we're spinning off where we're developing I'm actually writing a book entitled AI for Good, and if you're familiar with the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals, that book is discussing how we can create use cases, how we can democratize artificial intelligence and make artificial intelligence available for everyone so that we can leverage AI to address the Sustainable Development Goals. Now, it's our argument that, you know, the UN said it's going to take $5 to $7 trillion each year for us to reach those Sustainable Development Goals. But I believe you can't throw money at it to solve this issue. We need the money, right? I need a little bit of that myself, you know, for development. But hey, we also need individuals from countries to lobby with their governments, right? We also need what I'm referring to as citizen scientists. There's also some amazing TEDx talks on citizen science, where, you know, you have regular individuals, right, to perform research, right? Perform research, gather data, interview individuals. And so if we have all these, because I always say that you can get every single professor from around the world to conduct research, we're still not going to hit these 2030 goals. But if you get the tens of millions of citizen scientists, train them and have them collect data and input this data into this AI tool, then we may be able to get there. Then we may be able to collect this data, because the SDGs, they were announced in 2015, if I'm not mistaken. And there was a study conducted in China that said they kind of did like a checkpoint, if you will, to say, how well are we performing on these SDGs? How much data are we collecting? And they said that by 2020, they've only collected 45% of the data that's needed to reach those goals. So we're a little behind schedule. And I think that if we continue on, I don't think we're going to hit 70% by 2030. But I think that we need those tools in place, and I think it's lacking. And I think that artificial intelligence will assist us in getting that data.
What about the dangers of it? Because, you know, like, if it gets in the wrong hands, I mean, I've seen some stuff. I don't know, have you watched the movie Next? And it's like, you know, where it's controlling the car, it's talking on like Alexa. And I mean, to be honest with you, Amazon have been caught for that, where they were actually, you know, having people's conversations. So, like, how can we actually make sure that it's safe? I mean, I can see so many benefits to it, but at the same time, it kind of scares me.
It terrifies me, to be honest, because AI could be a weapon. Yeah. AI is an absolute weapon, right? And Elon Musk is not a fan of the government, but even Elon Musk says, hey, the government needs to look at this stuff and needs to monitor what these organizations are doing with this artificial intelligence. And so I know an individual, her job at Google is to ensure AI is not biased or racist, right? So you have, and you're creating a brand new market, but two, we don't know the capabilities of this tool. We don't know the capabilities of this tool. There are no AI court codes of conduct. There are no AI standards, because this thing is being developed so quick. I don't think we're going to be able to develop standards to keep up with it. So it's like the standards need to be way out here to catch what's going to be developed in the next couple of years. But how do you know what standards to create for something that doesn't exist? Because these solutions, these tools are being created every single day. And these things are so powerful. If you look at GPT-3, there, I think you can access a demo. My partner, he's actually testing it out now. That thing, he said, Justin, he said, that thing is so powerful. He said, I don't even want to see what GPT-4 does. You know, and he spent his entire career in technology, you know. And another point is that we have access to commercialized artificial intelligence. And with technology here in the US, with technology, the government, what we see publicly on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, things like that, that technology is 5 years old. The government had it 5 years ago.
Even longer, so I'd say even longer.
they had it even longer because they kept it to say, this is too powerful for the public. Let's scale it down a little bit, right? So what do they have today?
Oh, exactly. And what do they have today? Is it Facebook, I believe, had one and it started talking to itself and they it changed the language. Did you hear about that?
I didn't hear about that one. Please tell me more.
I remember seeing something about that they had created an AI, but it developed its own language that nobody could understand. So that's the fair, because it is so intelligent as such, because once you feed it the information, there is huge advantages. But you know, if it starts realizing, you know, that how to make itself better. And I mean, have you seen the actual Netflix Next series? Have you?
That I have not seen that one.
Yeah, so just looking at that, it's kind of, you know, where it was outing powers and everything. The reality is, it's possible. You know, that's, you know, you're just watching a show, but the reality is, what you see is actually possible, where it's affecting, you know, the everything that people is using, because we're glued to technology at the moment, and you turn off the switch, and we're in trouble.
We're in trouble, and that's very true. In that, I was speaking with an individual, you know, because I'm a big fan of Tesla, and she's in Puerto Rico, and she was like, it would be impossible to get a Tesla down here because the power grid's so terrible, you know. And she says the electricity is so expensive, you know. She said that a one bedroom apartment is, I think, $200 a month US. One bedroom apartment studio. She's like, a house, talk about $400 a month. Wow. You know, my thing is, people don't talk about that, you know. But the thing, and you know what, the sad thing is, half of the country probably doesn't even care about it because they're so caught up in themselves. And that's where I see this tool coming into play, where people from Puerto Rico can input their data in this tool, and we say, look at this problem. And if you have the entire world looking at this information, now the entire world is going to the United States and saying, what are you going to do about this? Right? You have millions of people in the US saying, what are you going to do about this? You know, and now you have people from every country in the world trying to call out certain things, you know. And then I've received pushback to say, well, then Justin, you're going to have hundreds of problems. Good. Good. Because now the government can participate. Now organizations can participate. Now individuals can participate. And now maybe we can stop talking about things and start actually doing it.
Yeah, no, brilliant. You know? Yeah, because that's the problem. People are, you know, hiding it under the carpet and just pretending nothing happens. And everyone drives on. No, like that'll be the way. And I mean, everybody wants to solve solutions, and everyone is investing in different charities and everything. And like, there is a load of charities that are corrupt. I mean, sometimes 1% of the money that's invested, sometimes it's zero, but 1%. Imagine that you give $100 to a charity thinking, yeah, I really care for this charity. And $1 of your $100 actually goes to the charity. You know, so I think the transparency will...
I'll give you one guess on how you can solve that. Put on the blockchain, baby.
Exactly. And to be honest, like because the reality is, if all the money for these things went to the right source, we wouldn't have so many problems. Because everybody's putting their hand in their pocket. You know, there's people driving helicopters and Ferraris, and they're running these charities kind of pretending that they're, you know, doing good for humanity when they're actually doing better for themselves.
Yeah. I mean, and again, that's where that transparency comes in, and that's where I discuss the whole transparent, sustainability piece. And I say that there's a discussion that has to be had on being transparent within sustainability. And we have these sustainability reports, but I think these sustainability reports are nonsense because they're not being audited, you know? So, and then some of those that are audited are being audited by these consulting companies that have already done the financial audits for these companies. So they're in cahoots with them, you know? And it's like, how do you get there? I don't have the answer right now, you know? So it's like, you need NGOs to kind of establish standards for auditing sustainability and things like that. You kind of have to have some kind of audits for, you know, these nonprofits and things like that, that are so-called social impact organizations. You need some kind of audits for those guys to say, are you truly doing well? You know, your social impact audit. That's what we need, you know. But I know sustainability is a big umbrella, and then you have social impact as, you know, under this whole sustainability piece.
I think the way that it should be done, because obviously a lot of the times, as you mentioned, they know the organizations that doing it, a lot of backhanders, you know, kickbacks and everything. But if it's done with different people that have no contact with each other and they don't know who's going to do the audit, so that if person A goes in and gets his kickback, the next person that's going in there, there's a lot of people aren't, you know, they're not, you know, they will not take a bribe. So if somebody else goes in, does the audit and realizes everything was a lie, then you have one guy that's gone straight away that had done the previous audit. Whereas if it's a complete institution that they're all connected, it's easy to corrupt it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But I mean, that's something we're talking about a lot. You know, I don't have the answer to it. That's one thing I'm speaking with a lot of people on around the world.
Well, I think the most thing and the promising thing is that there are so many people. I mean, there's a lot of things you're working on, you know, to, you know, improve humanity. And, you know, it's inspiring to see. So, you know, I think your next TEDx talk will be probably on something that you've achieved. And when you complete one of them projects that you're working on.
Yeah, I have a few proposals out there, and this is an exercise I would like people to talk about. So go on, I think the website's called slaveryfootprint.org. So if you go on to slaveryfootprint.org, the first screen you see is, it says, how many slaves do you own? Or how many slaves work for you? How many slaves work for you? You know, so you essentially will go through your whole house, you know, talk about how many cars you have, you know, how many bedrooms you have, you know, how many toys you have, how many electronics you have. And then it calculates it and it says how many slave hands, you know, modern slavery, have touched the products that you have within your house. Mine was 69. I was blown away. You know, it's crazy. So. But again, that's the things we don't talk about.
Yeah.
That's the things we don't talk about. And that's how tools such as blockchain, such as artificial intelligence, can bring light to these problems that we don't talk about.
Exactly.
You know, so that's why, you know, I'm so passionate about it, because we can leverage these tools for good. But, you know, I've been speaking with a lot of people. When I mentioned blockchain, all they want to talk about is Bitcoin. You know, and I say that you can talk about Bitcoin all you want to. I said, but your lip is going to be poked out in around July, because there's going to be a pullback. It's going to come back. You know, it's going to come back, and it's going to go to 50 in a couple of years, maybe. You know, I'm not saying financial advice, but I mean, just look at the trend. Look at what it's done in the last 5 or 6 years, right?
Yeah.
It's going to happen. There's going to be a pullback. It's going to go down for a while, and it's going to go right back up. It's going to skyrocket past where it is now, you know. But, you know, you have these people that think they're brilliant because, you know, they bought in and it went up, you know, what, 300% in last year or something crazy like that. You know, so, yeah, I mean, this happened the last time it did a huge run up, then it did a huge drop. You know, so I always say that, you know, my point is that these technologies can create all kinds of amazing things. Yes, you can create a company from these tools. That Bitcoin that you love is built on, that Ethereum that you love is built on. You know, a lot of companies are using the Ethereum blockchain to create solutions for organizations, to start up organizations, you know, because of the smart contracts, you know, they for transparency purposes. You know, so we're actually building our solution on Polkadot. So Polkadot, I'm not saying investment, but if you're interested in developing the blockchain, look into Polkadot. It's interoperable. So you can build blockchains on Polkadot, multiple blockchains on Polkadot. That's the power, you know, and because Polkadot's fairly new. My partner is trying to get into the committee to start collaborating with some of the developers at Polkadot. You know, to see where that solution is going. But, you know, Polkadot, they have a crypto. I'm not messing with it because I don't know enough about it. But I know we're trying to learn about the solution itself. We're not concerned about the cryptocurrency. We're concerned about the utility, about how it's used, how it can be implemented, you know. And I think from a blockchain perspective, I think that that's where people need to start. You need to say, okay, this crypto looks good. What is it used for? Okay, that makes sense. It's like a regular stock. I love Tesla. I love Tesla cars. Maybe I invest in Tesla. I buy from Amazon every single day. Maybe I'll invest in Amazon. It's the same exact concept. But people buy Bitcoin. What's Bitcoin used for? Nothing.
Speculation.
You know, it's speculation. It's hedging. Yeah. It's hedging. And you know, I will say that it's used for speculation. I use it for an investment. It's a long-term investment for me. I always tell people my daughter's getting my Bitcoin, you know, and I have my private key. I have my private keys in my lockbox in the bank, you know. So you have the most conservative institutions in the U.S. Some of the most conservative institutions in the U.S. invested in Bitcoin in the last couple of weeks. So it's being slowly adopted by the masses. Mm-hmm. So I'll speak with my students. I say that I am not offering you any investment advice by any means. I say, but just look into it. I say you can get it from Cash App. You can go get it from PayPal. You know, I say we did. People don't talk investing in undergrad. People don't talk about money management in undergrad. I say you guys are techies. Look and just see how this thing goes. You don't have to invest a dime, but you can see in PayPal what you deal with every single day on eBay, on Cash App, what you deal with your friends on every day. And see how this thing is going up and down. See how volatile this crypto is, you know. And I say that's how the market works, just at a less volatile level. But you have to talk about things they can relate to for them to understand it, you know. And going back to the speaking, which we went way off topic.
I think it was relevant anyway because a lot of people.
but going back to speaking, to get in a TED event, it has to be relevant. That's how I got 5 in a year, because blockchain was hot, you know. And I applied to like 20 events just to say, okay, if I do 20, maybe I'll get one callback. I got 5 callbacks in five events. You know, but again, I mean, but the thing is, if you're just trying to do it because it's hot, again, they're going to see right through it.
Yeah.
You know, but the thing is, you pull in artificial intelligence, and you pull in something you're passionate about. So if I pull in social impact, if I pull in diversity and inclusion, if I pull in how I can make a positive impact with artificial intelligence in Africa. Because AI is hot, and I'm bringing in something I'm passionate about, they see the passion.
Yeah.
Right.
Exactly.
So I would say that's for, I mean, if, even going outside of TEDx events, I speak at a lot of international conferences, and from a supply chain perspective, it's the same thing, you know, because I'm viewed as a thought leader within blockchain and supply chain management. People reach out to me all the time to come and speak because people don't understand it. You know, you don't have to be an expert in blockchain, but you have to understand how it's applicable to your industry. You know, you don't have to be in supply chain. You could be in healthcare. So if you're in healthcare and you look at blockchain and you look at how you can put patient medical records on the blockchain, you know, and in a permission blockchain where everybody has to sign in to see those medical records, a healthcare conference would be all over that.
Yeah.
I did a higher education conference, and a professor at Maryville University, they actually created a blockchain where students can view their transcripts on the blockchain. They're not talking about, they did it.
Brilliant.
I was like, yeah, that's what I said. 10, they put in their information, 10 seconds, I have a transcript.
Nice.
Normally it takes them a week, right? A week to a couple of days, you know? So it's like that, and it's that simple. Find something you're passionate about and just be knowledgeable about a technology. I'm biased, but be knowledgeable about blockchain, be knowledgeable about artificial intelligence, be knowledgeable about machine learning, and say, how can I tie in these technologies with my passion? And I bet you get some callbacks.
No, definitely. Finally, on like the mining, because I heard the mining is very expensive. Is that only with the Bitcoin, or is it, yeah, with the electricity?
Well, I just know about Bitcoin, and I know that it's not worth an individual's time, because companies are doing that. People are starting up companies to mine Bitcoin. And they're finding some very innovative ways to mine Bitcoin and use the energy. Again, this is hearsay. I have not looked into it at all. But I heard there's one company that set up shop beside like oil rigs, and they somehow capture the fire capture or something. Like, so whenever something fires off, they catch the fire and they use that as electricity or something like that. They do that in Texas, and I think another state does that as well, you know. So they're because like the oil companies have to capture it anyway, and then it costs them to burn it off or dispose of it or something. I'm probably butchering the process, but it costs the oil companies to dispose of it. So now these miners are going to oil companies and say, oh, we'll take it off your hands for you. And now they just use it for energy. You know, so there's some very innovative ways for mining. I am not sure about the mining for like Ethereum and all these smaller tokens and things like that. I am not knowledgeable about that, because, you know, when someone told me a couple years ago where, you know, they have companies for that and it's not worth your time, I didn't bother with it. And my uncle, he was mining like 10 years ago, you know, so he won't tell me how much Bitcoin he has, because he was telling me about Bitcoin when I was in grad school. So 2014, he was telling me he was mining, and he was investing in Bitcoin way before then. So yeah.
Hopefully he's kept on to it.
I think he shaved some off, but no, he pretty much introduced me to tech. You know, so he gave me my first desktop. You know, from my high school graduation, he was like, oh yeah, this is called a Palm Pilot. This is the next greatest thing. He was like one of those guys, like always buying like the newest gadgets and things like that. So, you know, he was in Bitcoin in ground zero, you know. So
I think you should thank him for all your TEDx talk. Yeah. So, because he's the one that threw the pebble into the water to get the ripples going.
He did throw the pebble in the water. That's for sure. Yeah, and we speak often, but he's been mum about his Bitcoin lately. So he. But yeah, he was in it big time.
Listen, Justin, it's been fantastic. Thank you very much for your knowledge. How can people get in contact with you?
I would say the easiest way to get in contact with me is going to be on LinkedIn. I can also be contacted via email at justinleegolston566@psu.edu. Again, jlg566@psu.edu. And for you all early adopters, I can be found on a Clubhouse. If you haven't heard about Clubhouse, do your research. It's the greatest application out there. People are on there sharing all kinds of knowledge. I do rooms on blockchain often. I do rooms on artificial intelligence. I do rooms on sustainable fashion. I do rooms on general fashion. And there's a lot of brilliant individuals on there. I got hooked up with the creator of the stablecoin. You know, so there are people like that in there. You know, Grant Cardone's in there often, you know, leading rooms. Damon John from Shark Tank's in there. He was in there this morning, leading a room. Ty Lopez was in, he's in there often, leading rooms. So there's a lot of big names just sharing knowledge. And you know what the best part is? It's free.
Somebody actually week, just 2 days ago, had sent me an invite, and because they were saying it's only on Apple, I believe. It's not
it's on only Apple. It's only on Apple. They are, I think they're accepting, like, I think someone said like 2 million users a week or something like that. If you're not on it, get on it immediately. It's amazing. Nobody's trying to sell you a dime. They are just sharing knowledge.
Brilliant. Okay. Listen, yes. Thanks a million. That's a good tip for people. So
yes. Thank you. That's actually where from my partner. You know, like I said, we were in a blockchain room. You know, he was talking about blockchain. I was like, reach out to me on LinkedIn. We started talking. You know, he was talking about his times at MIT, and you know, he was talking about stuff he's developed. He's actually developed 2 crypto coins. Mm-hmm. And I said, just a little test. I'll give you something. Create me a crypto token real quick. 5 hours later, he pinged me. He's like, go to this link. I said, this guy's brilliant.
That's a good guy to have in your corner.
Yes, absolutely.
Listen, Justin, thank you very much. I put all the links of what you just mentioned on the podcast description so people will be able to find you.
All right. Thanks a lot. And it's been an honor, and thank you for having me.
No problem. So that's all for the Speaking Podcast. You can find all our episodes on speakingpodcast.com. We're on YouTube. We're on BitChute. Be sure to share. Give us a thumbs up. Until next week, take care.